everybody. Welcome to River Talk. Thanks for joining us. Eric and Priscilla are out this week, so we have Daniel, Aaron, Zach, and me, Dougie Fresh. And Daniel is going to start it off this week with a letter from one of our listeners.
Thanks, Dougie. So this letter is from Justin from Roseburg, Oregon. First off, I want to say thank you for the show and hope you all keep it going. It's great to have this kind of show to listen to when I can't be on the water. I'm a pretty avid IKer and recently purchased a Cronin Ugly Duck. I was pretty skeptical at first sight of the boat, but after running it and then running my NRS Tomcat comparatively, I was completely sold. My question is about the NRS Outlaw Seminole. I'm curious if this boat came out before or after the Ugly Ducky. The floor looks almost identical to the Ugly Ducky. The profile view is pretty close to the Ugly Ducky as well as the rocker. I'm just curious if you all are familiar with this boat. Keep up the great work!
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, I know a little bit about this boat. The Seminole is a boat that NRS designed mainly for commercial outfitters. And NRS bought a company called Riken a few years ago, and they took all their designs and made them NRS designs. So this is the NRS... Is it the Outlaw, Riken? Wait, which one is
NRS
it?
Outlaw,
Seminole.
Riken, Seminole. Seminole 2 or 3.
Okay, it was the Riken Seminole, and now it's the
Outlaw.
NRS... Outlaw
Seminole.
NRS Outlaw Riken Seminole. So they took this design, which was a pretty good design in 1979, and then they took it and kind of beefed it up a little bit, like changed the manufacturing on it, how it's done. And the idea is it's a wider, more stable boat, which makes it a good commercial boat. A good boat for people that aren't like already good paddlers. And the key to this is the floor, and why it's similar to the Ugly Ducky is because they both have that floor that's a drop stitch that's thrown in there. So it's not a drop stitch, it's a part of the boat like in Moravia. It's a piece of drop stitch that they just shoved in the bottom of it. And by doing that, it makes the boats cost less. It's a more affordable way to manufacture boats. I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Is there a sleeve in the bottom of it?
There's no sleeve. It just kind of fits in there. Yeah, a sleeve would be a good idea, but they just kind of like have a bucket boat with some holes. And then they just shove this thing in there, and then you pump the boat up, and it kind of stays in place.
So this is a 1979 Riken boat with a little, like, inflatable floor thing they stuck in there, and they call it a new boat, and they're like...
Yeah, but the drop stitch is kind of nice, though. I mean, they're downsized to drop stitch, you know? It's tough to repair. Like, when you blow out one of those floors, it's basically done. But, like, the cool thing is that it's really easy to stand on, which is less important in an IK.
Yeah, with a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know that it actually holds more than an I-beam, but...
It does. No, drop stitch holds a lot more.
Does it?
Yeah, at least double.
Wow. So, there's that. You know, it's a... I don't know that in an IK... So there was something in the listener commentary about, you know, it being better for tracking, or maybe that was somewhere else. But in any case, you know, that it's going to track better when it's drop stitch. I don't think that's necessarily
Drop stitch doesn't track better because it's flat.
Yeah,
like a Moravia doesn't track well.
I don't think there's like performance differences for the drop stitch, right? Like, I think that there
doesn't are, Jacob Cruiser love the flat floors. Isn't that why he loves the stiletto?
He loves this. I mean, the stiletto is like a different deal, though. That's got, it has like 5 to 10 inch foam all the way through it.
Okay,
you know, that makes it like flat.
Okay,
there's no actual like inflatable floor that he's sitting on.
Okay,
but yeah, the stiletto is awesome. Honestly, I'd say the stiletto is better than both those boats we just talked about.
Oh, well, the Ugly Duck is pretty sweet. So let's go back to the question. Let's finish answering the question. So Dan was asking, is this basically a 1979 design with a drop stitch floor? And yes. So they basically have a dated design that they used a really effective manufacturing technique to make it really affordable. So the key to the Seminole Riken thing that NRS makes is it's only like, I think it's like $600.
Yeah.
They're ridiculously inexpensive. So if you want a low end, get a boat.
Something
this
stable,
is it.
Super cheap.
It just happens that it has a similar size tube to the Ugly Ducky. So this Seminole thing has 11 inch tubes. The Ugly Ducky has 12 inch tubes. And they actually do look pretty similar. And Matt with the Cronin boat, he did the same floor thing. So he has... The Ugly Ducky has that same drop stitch insert. And it's because I think, and Matt, please don't get mad at me if I say something wrong here, but I think it's the same less expensive manufacturing thing where you make a boat with basically a bucket boat floor, put some holes in it, and make a separate drop stitch that goes in there. And so part of the reason the Ugly Duckies are affordable and why Matt can make a business out of this is because he's made them with less expensive manufacturing techniques.
Well, yeah, okay. But they're so Justin says in the email, like the Seminole and the, you know, the NRS Seminole, NRS Outlaw Riken Seminole 1 and 2 are basically the same as like the Ugly Ducky. Says they look really similar. I think that's not true. So they're similar to the fact that they have drop stitch floors. Like at least in like the new versions of the Seminole, right? Otherwise,
they're both the same width.
The Ugly Ducky has way more rake.
Yeah, but they're both the same width, and it's just the Seminole has less. Is rake? You mean how much does the note balance crank them up?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's like how much and how quickly?
The rock.
Are rocker and rake the same thing?
Rocker and rake are like the same.
Okay, it's cool. That's what Justin's saying is: are they the same boat except for the rocker? And they're actually pretty close.
Okay, so except for the rocker and except for the fact that one has a totally square nose and one has a
pointed nose.
And that they're otherwise different boats, differently manufactured. So I'd say, like, I mean, it's kind of the question, I mean, like, no offense, Justin, like, it's a good question, but I'd say, like, it's kind of a question of, like, is any one, like, choose any IK and call that IK, IKA. Like, is IKA similar to IKB through X? Like, yes. In the sense that they're IKs. But if we stop distinguishing on the actual factors
I think they're actually pretty close, myself.
Well, okay, so what makes... What in terms of performance would you say would make them similar?
Oh, nothing. The Ugly Ducky's way better. But in terms of the way they look, they both have similar size tubes, they're both the same width, and they both have the same manufacturing design.
Different rake and different noses.
The main difference is the nose and the rake.
I would encourage anybody listening to this to go look at a picture of the Ugly Ducky, and then go look at a picture of the NRS...
Seminole Riken. Yeah, whatever it is.
Outlaw. Yeah. Like, look at those two things and tell me whether or not, or don't tell me, you can't tell me. But
I'm looking
decide for yourselves whether or not
you think
those are actually...
You can send an email to Aaron.
Send an email to me.
Wrap up this talk and move on to our topic of the week.
Yeah. Okay, I want to finish up. I'm going to have the final word here. Justin, thank you for the email. Stick with the Ugly Ducky. I don't think you need to buy the NRS Riken thingy. I think they stopped making them, actually. I think I saw when I went to look on the website to research this that they're discontinued. I could be wrong, but I think
they decided they were just doing a bad job at the thing that people are already doing.
All right.
Wow. So, topic of the week.
So, before we move to the topic of the week, I did want to put a shout out to our sponsor this week for Mars Toganov, most excellent driver in all of Central Asia.
Does a good job.
Amazing guy. So, if you're looking for a driver in Central Asia, going through Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan.
Yeah.
I mean,
all this place,
you name
all
your stand.
All the stands.
Mars Toganov is your guy. And he can be reached at MarsToganov@yahoo.com.
You want to spell that for us, Dan?
You can just look it up online.
Look up Mars Central Asia. You'll
we can put a link on our site.
So speaking of Mars, as the most excellent driver in Central Asia.
Let's get moving to
our
topic.
The top of the week this week is international kayaking trips. International rafting,
or
kayaking,
rafting,
river trips.
Yep.
And traveling in general.
Right. Mostly about rivers.
Okay.
River travel stuff, right? So any tips? If it's worth doing, if it's not worth doing, if it is worth doing, how you should go about it, why we like it, why we don't.
Dougie, why don't you start off telling us why you like to paddle international rivers?
Okay. I would say I like paddling them just as much as national rivers in the States. It just feels more exotic when you're out there. It feels more, I mean, people don't run them near as much as rivers in the States. So you just feel like you're exploring some new places that people aren't around.
Mm-hmm.
Most places, there's just not as many just population around the rivers. Like the rivers we've been looking at this week, they're kind of out in the boonies, we're seeing small villages, but that's about it. So you just feel extreme and out there, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'd kind of echo that extreme and out there thing, except that it seems to other people, when we tell our stories, that it's extreme and out there. And generally speaking, it's not that hard, and the rivers aren't that much different than rivers at home. But we kind of come home and we seem like badasses. So that's one thing that I really enjoy
about
international.
We can look really cool for doing class 3.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is what I'm always after, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you can just, get yourself a good class 2, 3 boogie water and frickin' slay that all day and throw some pictures up, for your friends.
Okay, that's not why we do it though, right? I mean, like, let's be real. Like, it's all that's all very tongue-in-cheek. I mean, you're not doing it to be rad though. I mean, like, what, Dan? Like, what are your real reasons for, like, what do you enjoy about when you go to a different country and kayak or like raft?
So you're talking about outside of Facebook and Instagram?
Yeah, like outside of the social media.
If that's one and two, what's three?
Yeah, like those are obviously the top two for you. I get that, but like, what's your third in mind for like what does it give you on a personal level?
Or Twitter?
Yeah. Okay, I forgot about those.
Yeah, those are some good platforms. You bring up some good points there.
But it's just novel. Like the languages are different, the rivers look different, the travel is super exciting, money's different. It's just all that plays into it. At the same time, you're running. Yeah, maybe it's class two and three, but it just feels pretty fun and exciting.
Yeah, or maybe it's not. Like maybe it's sometimes four
sometimes,
and five.
Yeah,
but I think to your point though, it wraps it all into one thing, right?
Yeah.
Like it's more comprehensive and. What's the word? It's more comprehensive and like complex experience, mm-hmm. you know. Than like so. Let's say you live in the Columbia River Gorge area, and you go and like you paddle, you know, the White Sand, which is great, like awesome river, right? But like that's a different thing. Let's say that you find a river in wherever northern India, like mm-hmm. Argentina, wherever it might be, that is similar to that or even different from that. Like the experience of going to that river, like these. All the things that are subsumed into experiencing that river give such a more complex experience than it is. Just like jumping in your Xterra, stopping off at Dutch Brothers, grabbing like a mocha frappuccino, and driving up to BZ. You know, so it's a different deal. It's a it's a cool thing.
Oh, we don't have Xterras.
You don't have
or mocha either. Frappuccinos in the gorge. Just saying.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So here's the thing. I personally bought a number of mocha frappuccinos in the gorge.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Damn. Just right off there, the turnoff.
Starbucks?
No.
Okay.
There's a Dutch Brothers there.
In Hood River? Yeah, but it's hard to find. Okay, this is that's off topic.
Yeah.
So, Dougie, that's fun you ask why I like doing it. I think I love travel. Like, I love going to other countries, seeing new things. But once I get to a new country, and I can't stand, it's not that I can't stand, I just get kind of tired of museums and monuments and standing in line to get tickets for touristy things.
Yeah.
And so when I travel, I get bored pretty quick. Because the most interesting to me is like the people and what they're doing in the country and the culture. And you can see that after a couple of days, and then I'm kind of over it. Where boating gives me sort of a purpose. So like when I go to another country, I get there. And I can kind of figure out the town, the cities, how to change money. And then it's like, okay, what are we going to do? Let's go boating. To me, that's a lot better than let's go to a monument and like put on, you know, when you go to a lot of these monuments and you go on the audio guided tour, like I can only do those once per trip.
Yeah.
And then I'm kind of fried. So I think I love to travel and boating gives me sort of like a reason to travel. And it takes me to places I wouldn't normally go.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like my wife and I went to Italy last week, and we went to places, there's just a tourist everywhere. Like, we went to the places you go. And right now, we're here in Kyrgyzstan. We're in a part of Kyrgyzstan that tourists just don't go to. Like, pretty much everywhere we've gone is off the beaten path.
It's definitely not tourist central.
Right, if we were on a tourist trip, we'd be at, like, other parts of Kyrgyzstan. Right now, we're having to figure out some crazy challenges based off this part of the country, that the only reason to come here is the rivers here. And same thing with Bhutan. When we go to Bhutan, I sell that trip to our customers because even though Bhutan isn't heavily traveled, there is kind of a path that tourists go. But as boaters, it forces us off of that path into remote places.
Totally novel beaten paths all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like even here, you know, it's like you say, like the only reason people would go here is a boat, but realistically, that's not a thing. Like, right? Like, how many people go here? So the places we're in right now, like, what is the place? Where are we right now?
Kizil-Oi.
Kizil-Oi?
Yeah.
That's probably not right.
It's right.
It's close to right.
It's Kizil-Oi.
Kizil-Oi.
Kizil-Oi, yeah.
Okay. Okay, figure out how to spell that.
KYZYL-OY.
Okay, so there it is. But, like, so look that up and try to figure out, like, I don't think boaters go here either, right? Like, this is like, oh, where are you going boating? Kizil-Oi. Oh, yeah, Kizil-Oi.
That's where we were last
week.
We're in Kizil-Oi right now.
No, we're not. But it doesn't matter.
Like, anyway, okay,
so it turns out we don't know where we are. But in any case, the point is that like this isn't even a place that a boater would go. Yeah. But is he? But only in places like this do boaters go.
We're probably right? the only foreigners in this town right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think so. I also can relate to like you were saying like you know you hate like you love traveling but you like get tired of going just to monuments yeah. and museums and things like that, right, Zach?
Yeah.
It's like. I feel the same way. Like, I can only go to so many... Like, I really appreciate... So, like, you go around Europe. Like, I really appreciate European architecture. I really appreciate going to, going to cathedrals, whatever else. Like, they're beautiful. They're amazing. It's super impressive that humans do these things. But at a certain point, like, you see so many cathedrals, and it's just another cathedral, right? It's like, it's not a cold, dead place, but the way I always think of it is, like, these are cold, dead places compared to the living places that I can go and experience, and I think that's what international, like, boating does for me.
So what are some tips and tricks? What are some things like that you guys suggest? For example, would you go somewhere international that already has boats, or would you bring boats with you?
Well, before we move on to that, let me say one thing. It's sort of a tip and trick slash a reason to boat internationally is you can often afford, and it's convenient to have a driver.
Right.
Which means shuttles and everything is just super smooth.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's just it's cheaper in many countries to travel and to hire that driver, so... that just makes it so much easier to run some of these rivers. You don't have to worry about getting a ride, getting a bus, getting that hitchhike to take out. Yeah, so that's one tip slash bonus of international boating.
Cool. So any other tips or tricks or like things you guys like would do to like get boats or any thoughts you have about that kind of thing?
Well, out of the gate. Especially when you're exploring new places, is like making use of some of these freaking amazing things that smart people come up with, like Google Earth.
Oh yeah!
Holy mackerel!
Yeah.
Like Zach, your ability to like take that and put little point by point by point things, and figure out a gradient of a river, so we can be like, hey, you know what? This thing might go. Is pretty substantially.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And. Just absolutely freaking awesome.
So that's so actually, quick tangent. Like, how much do you guys think that things like Google Earth have changed foreign boating, international boating, or I guess not even international boating, but just I mean, it could be boating in general. But I mean,
I think international has a lot because people are at home, so we have looking through Google Earth to find places to boat. Like this trip we're on, we have some guidebooks, but we're also trying to just go find rivers that maybe have never been run. So we'll, like at home, before this trip, I would go search canyons and look and I'd get a view of the canyon. I could tell the gradient. I could make a guess at how big the river was. And so I think because we're able to sit at home and daydream with Google Earth, it makes us more willing to travel internationally to places.
Well, and it's also, I mean, but I guess another way I mean is like, so think about it in the sense of like at home. So like your home is Hood River, right? Uh-huh. It's like... In Hood River, you can look at a guidebook, or you can go online, look up trip reports. Like, there are still things that have maybe not been run, like the unfound fruit. I don't think that's a phrase, but...
You know, at home, things that aren't run? Tin Cup Creek.
Right.
That hasn't been run.
Okay. So there are still things, right? But, like, there aren't a ton.
Yeah.
So, but for any sort of standard run, like, you can probably look up, like, what is a gradient? What is even the flow?
Yeah, easy.
Right? Whereas internationally... When you look these things up, like you just look up Kyrgyzstan and then you're like, well, looks like there's a lot of mountains and a lot of water. And you start just searching by Google Earth, right?
Unless you go to like Costa Rica, where in Costa Rica, everything's pretty much figured out.
Right. That's a little bit different.
You know, so there's places that I'm just familiar with, like Kyrgyzstan or Bhutan, for example, where it hasn't been figured out yet. And then there's all the paddling destinations. Like Ecuador, maybe Austria.
But I mean, even in some of those Peru. Bigger paddling destinations, like even in places like Chile, like even in Pucón, which is like considered one of the paddling the hard shelling meccas. Like even there aren't really formal gauges.
There's not gauges, but people know all the runs.
Yeah,
they know the runs. They know the runs. But yeah. I guess if you were sitting in your room in Hood River, like and you're trying to figure these things out, like. Google Earth would still probably be the most useful tool versus having a contact in Chile and being like, hey man, what's that river look like right now, right?
But if I was going to Pucón, I wouldn't use Google Earth at all. I would just show up and be like, alright, where do I go, guys?
Which is also the way to do it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. We're here.
So I guess, back to the question though, like, do you think, like, aside from Google Earth, do you think there are any other, like, what are the other things that we use now?
Like phone apps?
But think about
Phone apps or whatever else that we use now that make international boating... either more accessible or more accessible in general.
But consider the day when we kind of have like a change of plans And we're like, hey, we're not going to go down the Pamir Highway. We need to head east or west.
Somewhere in country.
West. Yeah, kind of stay in country until Dougie gets his visa sorted out.
Which
here.
Just came in, by the way.
And so congratulations, Dougie. Way to go. And we, you know, through, like, searching through there, like, you stumble on the frickin' Isfay Ramse River in the middle of frickin' nowhere, and that's we're like, hey, look at that, there's a road next to it.
Yeah.
Let's go check that out.
Yeah, without like, Google
that
Earth.
Would not ever happen.
Without Google Earth, we wouldn't have gone paddling today.
And there's so many places, but there's, like, but I feel like that's a really unique thing about foreign travel, that you cannot do that, like, in most places. And, like, coming here to Kyrgyzstan and being like, dude, hey, we're going to go. Hey, look at that. There's a road next to a
but
river.
But I don't
let's
think most boaters do that. I don't think most boaters will go drive up a road hoping there's a river there.
Well, but we knew there was a river.
Domestically or internationally?
So there's also American Whitewater has this awesome Google Earth layer for rivers in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And they've actually, it's really cool. You can download it for members. And they have, I recently saw on there they have an international link too, and I haven't looked at it yet, but maybe some of those rivers are on there. Maybe that's a way some people that wouldn't necessarily look, just search for rivers, could look on there and see what other rivers are.
You guys think that can kind of be a trap though? You know?
A little bit.
So that's another benefit of international boating. So I feel like it's like the trap of knowledge. So like when you're in the States, like you grab soggy sneakers. It's like, and you look at soggy sneakers and like, these are the runs that exist. And I'll do these runs because they exist. And like you get locked into the idea that like these are the things that I can do. And I'll do those things.
Totally.
Right? Whereas like if you don't have those things, so like say if you don't have the American Whitewater overlay for Google Maps in Tajikistan, then like you can't look at the things and be like, oh, like here are the things that exist in Tajikistan.
And I bet there's not one of those for Tajikistan.
Right. Like maybe
there,
not.
There is. There's like
is there?
That Whitewater. So that's a good tip.
Rivers of an Unknown Land.
Yeah. So my friend Vlad wrote a book, Rivers of an Unknown Land. That covers the former Soviet Union. So some of the runs we've done, like the Kekemarin, was all in there. But there's also an app this guy Mike Kruderkowski wrote. I don't know. He's a Russian guy. He's super nice. I wish I could pronounce his name. Mike, if you're listening, I'm sorry, I'm a jerk. Mike K. He has an app called Whitewater.guide. Whitewater.guide is an app, and it has layers for Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan.
Wow.
It doesn't have everything, but Dan and I have been using it to kind of figure out where to go sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the Kimse, whatever. What did we do today?
We did the
Umse.
I just deleted
it. It doesn't have that. But it has a good number of runs that like and gives us some basic beta. And it has a whole bunch of countries.
Well, so that's the trade-off though, right? Like if you have the beta to whatever extent you have it.
Yeah.
If there are indications of like here's places you can go and here's what this is about, then like you tend to go to those places.
Yeah, totally.
Right? It's like think about it this way, like you go to
like
a new city. Like say you go to like you go on a trip to Kansas City, which why would you, right? But you go on a trip to Kansas City
barbecue.
Okay. So you're like super into barbecue and you're like, I'm gonna go to Kansas City and you're like, what are the best barbecue places? And you pull up Yelp.
Yeah.
And Yelp is like, here's the places that you're interested in.
Yeah.
It's respondent bias, you know. It's like you're like, okay,
but
these are the places that I'm going to go.
But that's smart, right? Like,
no,
if you don't use Yelp,
I mean, like,
you
I'm
might
not
end
saying,
up
I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying it's not useful.
Yeah,
of course it is. Like, and it's also like so that's why like Whitewater.guide, like that's why that's also a great resource.
Yeah,
it's like if you're into Tajikistan, like we're trying to get into. It's like if you're going to that place, you want to know the options that you do have that are known.
You want
to
know something's buttable.
But there is something to be said for going to a place where you don't know the things that you don't know.
They're a starting point. And
yeah,
might
so you start.
You,
so you,
if
so,
you
like, so
out,
using resources like
yeah.
Google Earth rather than using resources like you know a guidebook or any sort of guide.
Yeah.
So where you're just.
But every time
out,
you use Google Earth,
things.
You're taking a chance. Like we drove up that road today.
For sure.
There was a chance we wasted our day driving.
Yeah, but
up the road.
That's kind of the beauty of it,
yeah.
which is what I'd say is one of my favorite things about travel in general, and also like travel for boating.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that day one.
It's just that you're taking chances,
right?
Like you're doing things.
No, but day one we knew that wasn't a book. That was in Vlad's book,
but
and it was in the guidebook.
Yeah, let's think about like today with our.
Oh, the side creek. You're right. So yeah, the first day we drove here, we drove an hour up a side creek, and it was a bust.
Yeah, just
and so we wasted
water.
Our morning, but we're still able to paddle the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, there's another river nearby.
But
the
thing about like just stumbling on that Isfay Ramse River today, and the freaking amazing canyon that it that we went through. Those were freaking unbelievable.
Yeah.
And who has ever been down there before?
Yeah, even if we hadn't paddled, that would have been cool to go up there.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So let's get to some useful stuff. Like,
right,
what are some tips and tricks?
Well,
like, things like, I think I want to get talk about boats a little bit.
Because
here's my thing. Like, I used to go travel a lot and as a hardshell kayaker, and I would – traveling with a boat is hard. I've never actually flown with a boat. I'd always get somewhere, and Dougie and I would rent a lot together, and it's just hard and expensive.
Yeah.
And you have to – you know, sometimes it's stressful to get, even get the boats. You spend a half a day trying to find boats. And my first time down the Fuga Lafu, nobody would even rent us boats. Like, it was just a bust because we couldn't even get boats.
Yeah.
And so I've lately really enjoyed traveling with the back rafts, the air back rafts, because they're 10 pounds. I mean, Dan flew with four of them over here.
Yeah.
You know, as part of his luggage. Like, four, you got three in a bag, right? Three
in one bag, or all four? No, no, there were two different bags, but yeah. But it was remarkably easy.
Four back rafts.
Four inflatable kayaks.
Four back rafts weigh 40 pounds.
Yeah.
So if you're just looking to, like, definitely have a boat with you, having the back raft. And inflatable kayaks are easier because they you can get one inflatable kayak in a bag, you know, where you can't always travel with a hard shell or a raft because rafts weigh over 100 pounds. You can't get those on a plane. And I know that but one thing I'm trying to do is come up, try to find more inflatable kayaks that are in that 20 to 25 pound range so you can travel with them. But do you guys know Neil N? I should know his last name. I'm bad. Let's just say Neil N. He has no Neil and Neil Nelkirk. Neil Kirk. He has this. Him and a couple of his friends have this cataraft that weighs you can travel with. It's all packable. The frame gets down. It's like a 12 or 13 foot cataraft. Have you guys seen that?
No.
I think you can learn more about it at nocoolers.com. I'll put a link somewhere. But that's a cataraft you can travel with. It's kind of cool that it breaks down. But I'm a big fan now of having so many challenges of renting kayaks, of trying to travel with your boat.
Yeah. So I'd say, like, my impulse is definitely either travel with boat or rent boat. Like, traveling with hardshell or with raft is a huge pain. Yeah. Like, certain airlines won't even take an inflatable – or, sorry, hardshell kayak. Yeah. Like, I know if you're going down to Peru well, with certain airlines in particular, they say that they're, like, so often used to transport drugs, so you're not allowed to, like, take them down there. You have to have, like, special checks, and it can take, like, 2 months.
Yeah.
You have to be way ahead of the game, which, you know, for my planning purposes, just never, ever works. So, for me, it's always, like, the availability. I mean, usually where I start when I'm going about, like, traveling, so say, like, I went down to Peru 2 years ago to do the Marañón, and, like, the first place I started was where can I rent boats, and that's how the whole trip, like the whole trip, folded out from there. So it usually is started with where can I get boats.
And what'd you do?
I went with Sierra Rios with Rocky Contos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had tons of options like hard shells, and that's honestly usually the easiest option.
Totally.
I mean, like usually where there are rivers, I mean you might have to travel a little bit to get in between. But the same thing when I went down to Chile, like. You know, got boats in Pucón, which was actually a little bit tighter than I thought it was going to be, and way more expensive.
Did you take your own paddle and skirt?
Yeah, I took all the rest of that gear myself. But yeah, the boat itself, like, got in Pucón, which was definitely the way to go. Like, went down to Lafuga from there, you know, because, like, there were definitely not options down in Lafuga.
I agree with that. It's a pain to travel with a kayak, but at the same time, I think some airlines, Alaska, for example, and United, I believe, are getting better at letting you travel with sports equipment.
You're like the first. You're the only person who said a nice thing about United in the last two weeks.
Yeah, even if they are easier, once you get the kayak there,
you got to
put it on the car.
Which is not the hardest part. Because think about it this way:
Once you arrive at the airport,
in how many situations have you honestly had trouble transporting? Like the difference between transporting an inflatable kayak and transporting a hard shell is pretty marginal once you're in country. Like, really, the big hurdle is getting to the country with the thing, right?
It's the big hurdle, but still...
You've got to find a taxi.
It's a tougher thing to store in your hotel room. Your hostel room.
And you have to store, like, on top of the taxi when you arrive.
And if you don't have a driver, it makes it tougher.
I once took, like, a 6-hour bus ride in Costa Rica with... I had to hang the kayak inside the bus over people's heads, and they were not very happy. I had to buy, like, 3 seats, but they still sold the seats, so we had people sitting under the kayak.
Now, so back to your point, though, Zach, like, I'm with you on the, I think for international boating, like, IKs and light IKs are the future, and they're a game changer. Mm-hmm. Like, they make it so much easier. So there are certain things you're not going to want to do they're like, you know, you're probably not going to want to run the up two sections of the Food of LeFou in like an air background.
Yeah, you're not going to run class. Probably not going to run class.
And honestly, listeners, you shouldn't.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're. But if you're going to take a back raft, you're going to run class 3, maybe 4.
Well, and you can do, depending on the type of run, you can do something a little bit more buff. Yeah. But like, so for example, like I've taken like Eric, who's usually on here.
Yeah,
we've taken our the OTT Orange Torpedo like. Custom inflatable kayaks and some pretty big, you know, more challenging water internationally, and it's worked out well. They're definitely heavier than the back rafts.
But the Orange Torpedo boats, they weigh more. They're definitely better.
They're for sure better.
The back rafts are great because they weigh 10 pounds, and you can give them all the Dan, he'll bring them over. But they're not the best performing boat.
No.
They're adequate.
They are what they are.
They like, are what they are. They're adequate.
They are. And they're awesome because, you know, it's like there's nothing that speaks more to me than not having to carry a heavy thing in on a hike.
Or even between airports.
Yeah, or on a portage. That's actually been really wonderful.
Holy mackerel.
This has been my first real international trip where I've used, or really like extended river trip where I've used a back raft. And one thing that I will say is portaging with the back rafts is outstanding.
Yeah.
It is such a different world.
Today, Dan and I rolled ours up to
yeah, which I wish I wish I'd seen before. before I went up the windy vertical slope.
Right. So you could even roll them up and get around something.
In hindsight, it is the obvious solution. Yeah. But
so the last thing I'll talk about is. We had a viewer send an email that she didn't see asking about if you're going to go choose an outfitter internationally, how do you pick an international outfitter? Like, so like some people will just take boats and go and figure it out. And like, that's kind of like how I like to do things. I don't want to hire an outfitter. I like to figure it out myself. But if you have, let's say a very limited, like a week, and you want to maximize your boating in the country, how do you pick an outfitter? And his email was in response to the 4 people that died in Costa Rica with an outfitter recently. And so he said, you know, that 4 people died, they maybe made some bad decisions. How do you pick a good outfitter to do your first international trip or do any international trip?
I mean,
word of mouth, like talk to people you know that have done it before for sure. I got connected to a company called Selva Whitewater in Costa Rica, and I'm going to do a trip with them in a couple of weeks through somebody I know and his friends. Of his that have done tons of trips. So I think talking to people you know have likely done trips with people, and you can ask them about how the different companies are. That's a great way to do it. TripAdvisor type things are awesome. They have reviews and people rate companies. What else?
I mean, the internet generally, right?
Internet generally, yeah.
So if you want to know like who does well,
they have reviews of everybody and what rivers they do and what areas they work in.
And there are out there in the world, there are international guide certifications that might be helpful.
Yeah, really?
There are, yeah.
They're out there.
Are you talking about the International Rafting Federation guide certificates?
No, they're like country-specific ones, though, too.
No, I was talking about the international.
Oh, you were talking about that.
Yeah. just that there is a standard out there in the world that maybe if you are going in completely blind and you're like, hey, do I trust this Yelp review? Or, all their guides have this one certification and they care.
That's a good point.
You could just ask about first aid.
It's like the UN of rafting.
Yeah. I like International Rafting Federation. I'm not bagging on them. But also certifications don't always equal competence.
True.
But I have to say, I agree. Now, you made me think, because I had no answer to this question. I'm glad you guys answered it. I didn't know what to tell them. But I would say that's a good one. Like, at least ask them if they have International Rafting Federation certificates. And as Dougie said, first aid and CPR. But first aid and CPR is sometimes can be a joke. It's a 6-hour class that teaches you how to put Band-Aids on and do CPR.
But if a company says all our guides are certified with this certain level, it might tell you something.
Yeah. But I think also having swift water rescue.
Yeah.
You know, that may not show, those certifications may not mean that they're more competent or have better judgment. But I bet there's a correlation. I bet they're generally better in judgment if they have all taken some sort of classes.
Yeah. There's a higher degree of confidence if so.
Yeah. I don't think the training itself makes them safer. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that they took the training that shows that they're more professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the company culture supports that sort of ethos.
Would you ask if they're Knowles guides? Would that make a difference?
That would make a difference.
Would it? Wow.
I mean, It's a, just another piece of data, right?
Yeah, I mean that's true.
And they're not guides, but they're knowledge instructors.
Yeah. Well, I think we beat this one to death. Do you guys want to get into our final segment, which is Gear of the Week? And I didn't prep you guys for this, so I'll give you a chance to think about
Well,
go ahead, Aaron.
I was gonna say, we want to talk about international gear, like things you want to bring.
Okay, yeah, we can talk about international gear first. No, but then we're gonna get the Gear of the Week.
Okay.
We can get really deep in the gear.
Yeah, but so
well, split wise, that's sort of the gear.
Yeah, so like gear apps.
Are we are we doing Gear of the Week now, or what are we doing?
No, we're talking about we're on an international kick. We're
so I think an obvious choice if you want to do international boating, especially if you're getting your phone anywhere near water. From our experience this week, is to stay away from iPhones.
That's not true, folks.
And generally, if you get yourself a Galaxy, they seem to stand up well to the water. Pull them out anytime, snap a picture, put them back in your life jacket.
You know, this is actually a nice thing because I know that 90% of the people listening to this are rolling their eyes.
On their iPhone right now.
At the suggestion that the archaic Android, Galaxy, Samsung, whatever. Like, is Samsung still in business?
There's three Androids versus two iPhones.
That thing is still
existing. Okay, anyway.
All right. Sorry about getting a little tangential.
Or get a LifeProof case. Hashtag live LifeProof.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Life. Nice. Yeah. Try to fumble around with a LifeProof case rather than just pull out your phone that came. This is how it's born in the world.
I have one of those.
Ready to be, wet.
Okay. In 2 years, all phones will be waterproof, so this will be moot.
Yeah. So,
if you're listening to this in 2019, we apologize.
One thing I'd say is if you're boating and you're traveling internationally, bring your mesh bag.
Oh yeah.
Like your boating bag.
Oh, that's huge.
Roll those things up, like bring extra mesh bags, so like at least one for your boating stuff, and duffels for random gear, because the way you pack when you're trying to get stuff like packed up in your bag is really different than the way you pack once you're actually in country.
Because you want to be able to have like a takeout bag, so you have your clothes ready.
Yeah.
Before you would take out.
Like you want to be a human being. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not serious.
A cup is a good thing, and so is a backup cup. Aaron.
It sure is. It sure is, Zach. Yeah. I just lost my cup a couple hours ago.
Dougie, did you have anything else
on the Splitwise app? We might as well talk about that.
Splitwise is
great. We've been using that on this trip. It's an awesome
app.
Check it out.
The Splitwise app. We don't use the other apps anymore.
It's a way to divide up costs for a trip. So if somebody pays for something, they can say, I paid $100 for this, split it between these two people, or these three people that were on the trip with me, and it does all the math for you and figures out the end who owes
and
who what.
And it supports international currency.
And it supports.
It has
Kyrgyzstan
in there.
Yeah.
So, this morning I paid for the hotel, or you pay for the hotel in dollars, so you put your dollar amount in there, but then if you pay for dinner, you can pay in SOM, and it will do all the math for you, which is really
great.
Cool. Yeah,
Google Translate.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Valuable. Google Translate. Yeah. Boom.
That is incredible. There's this thing where you could, press a camera and you point it at, you know, menus and things like that. And it tells you what Sherlock says, which is otherwise just an impossible situation. I can't imagine, what do you think if we were here 15 years ago and we didn't have a driver or anyone? Either way, actually, because really, in certain
cases, we'd probably learn Russian a lot faster.
Yeah, we'd probably.
But we'd struggle.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of guess and check. Okay, well, that was disgusting. I'm not going to order the thing that looked like that again.
I would say try to minimize what you bring and realize that you can do laundry a lot of places. You don't need as much as you think you might need. You need layers for warmth, but you just don't need to bring quite as much of the basic layers that you need.
I mean, we both brought two puffies, right?
We brought a small
puffy. I wish I brought two puffies. Yeah.
But that's layers for warmth.
Right.
But you don't need 10 pairs of underwear and 6 t-shirts.
For sure.
Yeah. Anyway.
I would also say spreadsheets are great for...
Oh,
Jesus. All right, let's go on to the
Gear
of the Week.
Oh, man.
I started
Gear
spreadsheets.
Of
the Week. No, Dougie Fresh
gear
is right.
Gear of the Week.
I started spreadsheet
gear
for
of
gear...
The week.
Excuse me. Dougie Fresh is right. Spreadsheets are great.
Yeah.
Dougie did a great job on this.
I'm like
super
the
useful.
Biggest
but
spreadsheet advocate in the. I can outspreadsheet your ass any day of the week, motherfucker. And
you can swear.
Okay.
Yeah, I just have to click a button.
But let's get on to Gear of the Week.
So let me clarify. I would say, start a spreadsheet for the gear you take on your trip, and then you can modify it for your next trip and make it better and better.
Yeah.
All the time.
I'm
going to
bet that
it's hopefully
trip,
something you do for
all
your
seven listeners out there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Dougie.
Good tip, Doug.
And I know Zach has a list on his wall of all the things he needs to go.
Yeah, I don't have a spreadsheet. I just write on my wall.
Yeah. So, similar idea, but you have more stuff on an international trip, so.
But my list has 7 things on it.
No, it's just a good idea.
Cool.
What are the 7 things on your list?
It says boat / sup.
And then shoes, life jacket, shoes, paddle.
Life jacket, so. Paddle, helmet, dry spray suit. Skirt, warmth, throw bag.
What is included in warmth?
It just says warmth. This is in my house for me going paddling after work. This isn't like something I use for a major trip. This is just like if I'm in a hurry to get out the door, make sure I don't forget my helmet, which I've done multiple times.
Like, I'm trying to think spray screw, which I've done a ton.
Like 3 times this year.
Oh, subleash is on there.
Like, I forgot my freaking helmet.
Yeah.
And so at least I have a wife who's like, don't forget your helmet this time.
Yeah, that helps. I have a wife too, but she doesn't say that. Don't forget your helmet this time. She says she hides my helmet, so I just come home.
I don't have a wife. I have a dog, and he doesn't tell me anything that are helpful.
All right, let's get to Gear of the Week. We're on major tangent.
Wait, I got one more too.
Oh, Dougie.
Hey, come on. This is Dougie only says useful things.
It's like me and Dan against Aaron and Doug.
I would say bring 4 to 5 large plastic bags. They really help with dry proofing stuff.
Yeah, and you'll never be able to find a plastic bag in a foreign country.
Well, you can, but
so make sure you import
heavy duty ones, like compactor bags, are nice to have.
Yeah,
there you go. Very useful. That's a great. I mean, yeah.
By the way, you can find plastic bags in foreign countries, but they're all super low quality, small. Like, imagine you go to the small market, like in a very small town. They're like the things that you get there where you buy like one soda and it drops through.
Right, right, and think yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's a good recommendation.
Can we get on to Gear of the Week?
Cool. Yeah. So, just so you guys know, Gear of the Week is where each of us talked about a piece of gear that we like, and we maybe recommend it, say something good about it. And I haven't thought of one yet. So, does anybody else want to go?
Sure.
Go ahead, Daniel.
So, I, like, right before this trip, Zach's like, hey, it'd probably be a pretty good idea to bring a paddle. And I was like, oh, right, that. And so, I picked up the Werner Sherpa, like, 4-piece breakdown paddle. And that thing was a freaking rock star on this trip. So that thing's been great.
Cool. I agree. That was my Gear of the Week last week. Not the Sherpa one, but just Werner 4-piece paddles. And I'm a Sawyer ambassador, so I probably shouldn't be pushing Werner products. It's that good. Like,
they're
great. The Werner 4-piece is that good.
I've used them. I travel with them all the time.
Yep.
I like the Hayax. I just got the Astral Hayax shoes, and I'm loving them so far. They've been great for... The traction is incredible, and the sizing is pretty good, so they slip on nicely over the dry suit. They've been great.
They're very fashionable, Dougie. They look good on you.
Thanks.
Yep. Yep.
So I'm trying to actually remember the name of the of the shoe that I was going to recommend here. It's also natural. It's the TR...
One or something?
Oh, the Astral TR1.
Is that what it is?
It's an actual shoe. Are they blue?
I wish. I actually got the Rasta color, which I didn't want.
All right, while you're looking up on your phone, my Gear of the Week is this bag that I have. It's the Mystery Ranch. If you know Mystery Ranch, it previously was Dana Designs.
Yeah.
And the guy, Dana Gleason, Dana something, he started a new company.
Call him Dana G.
Dana G. I'm so bad at last name. This is awful. Thank you, Dan M. so it's Dana actually had Dana Designs, and he sold that to K2, I believe, and then he started this new company, Mystery Ranch, and it's just top level stuff. And I had this Mystery Ranch bag they make for firefighters. I forget what it's called. It's black, and I've traveled with it a bunch now.
The big one,
yeah, the
yeah,
one I gave
amazing.
You. And now I've traveled with it like 5 or 6 times, and it's exactly, he designed it to be the exact biggest volume you can travel with. So nobody can deny it, but it's the largest it can be.
Carry on, you mean?
Carry on. And it has these back straps. It's a duffel, but it has these backpack straps that pull out.
But to be clear, I don't think it's made for carry on. This thing's a big bag.
No, it's not carry on. Sorry, it's not carry on. It's for checking.
Okay.
It's the biggest bag
you
can check.
Check in.
And so it just has a big zipper across the top that's easy to use. And it's a duffel, but the backpack straps are rad. Like, I would backpack 10 miles with them. I wouldn't love it, but they're not terrible.
Yeah, you can
and
do
so,
that.
And so, anyway, it's a Mystery Ranch duffel bag. They make a couple, but it's the one they specifically make for firefighters, and that's my Gear of the Week.
Yeah. So the one I was trying to remember was the TR1 Merge.
Yeah.
I was pretty hesitant to get these, so like I love the Hayax.
Mm-hmm.
I had a pair of Hayax and I tore them apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going back and forth between the Hayax and the TR1 Merges, because like realistically, when you have, you know, like they're advertised as like a the Expedition kayak shoe. It's like, for those of you who like to hike in, like, deep distances, which those, you know, anybody who knows me would say, it's like not a thing that I am looking for, but do do. You know? It's like that's the shoe for you. I think it's a weird thing to imagine, like a weird compromise to imagine. You know, it's like the shoe that is great for kayaking that is also good for hiking. It's a pretty tough combination.
I think it's two different shoes.
Think about the Astral Brewer, right? Or like the, what were they?
I don't think that shoe exists.
The 510 water tennis.
Yeah,
like those were awesome on the water, but like hiking in, I destroyed one pair of those in a single hike in.
Like I never wear the same shoes hiking in and paddling. Two separate pairs of shoes.
Right. Yeah. But that's what this is advertising. Yeah. Like they're saying like you can do both these things, and though I haven't really done any substantial hiking in them yet, they're awesome shoes.
You know what I think I like?
What about takeout today?
Yeah. Actually, you know what? The shoes were not the problem with the takeout. Those have my lungs and legs.
Yeah.
But the wind.
Yeah, and the wind.
I think Astral has some durability issues. And I don't blame Astral. It's just like when you put shoes in water, they fall apart.
Right.
That's just a thing. And so, but Astral shoes don't last that long. But those shoes are pretty bomber. I bet they don't last a long time. Those TR1s are beefy.
Honestly, everywhere. Even the Hayaks lasted longer than I thought they were going to.
Mine didn't. Mine
lasted a year, which is longer than most of my kayaking shoes have.
All right, guys. I think we need to call it. Any last words, Dougie Fresh?
No. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks for another episode of River Talk Podcast. If you have any hate mail you want to send to about Aaron, some of his bad comments, send it to therivertalkpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.
Right. Take care.
You want to say goodbye, Doug?
Bye, everybody.
Daniel?
Peace.